I'm the Walter E. Williams Research Fellow, and I'm particularly honored to be in a fellowship named for Walter Williams because, as those of you who know Walter Williams know, that he was a great supporter of the Southern cause, which is what I'm going to talk about today and talk about some of the reasons why Walter Williams and Murray Rothbard were supporters of the Southern cause, and to talk about how we should understand the history of the Reconstruction era. I think that I'm the only speaker at this conference who's not actually a revisionist, because I'm telling you the true history of the Reconstruction era. It's the true history that everybody used to know until a Marxist known as Eric Foner purported to have debunked it. And his method of debunking the history was to tell you that all the historians were racists. And according to him, that's sufficient for you to know that you shouldn't be reading any of their history. You cannot debunk history by calling the historian a racist. So I'm just looking back at the true history of William Dunning and many other scholars writing in the same tradition. So that's the talk, Reconstruction Reconsidered. And I want to begin by asking, what is the cause? What is the Southern cause? So when we say, when people say the lost cause, what are they really referring to? And I think the best person to define for us what the Southern cause is Jefferson Davis. He would be in a position to know, because he spoke at length, endlessly, about it in the Senate, in the United States Senate, and later became the president of the Confederate States of America. And he said, when the cause was lost, what cause was it? Not that of the South only, but the cause of constitutional government, of the supremacy of law, of the natural rights of man. That was the cause. So anybody who supports constitutional government, the supremacy of law, and the natural rights of man is a supporter of the Southern cause. And this is why Murray Rothbard wrote in defense of the Southern cause. If you read his lecture published under the title Just War, he talks about his reasons for supporting the Southern cause. And if you scroll right to the end of that lecture, Murray Rothbard writes, and then Davis and Lee and Jackson and Forrest and all the heroes of the South, Dixie and the Stars and Bars, will once again be truly honored and remembered. So I want to speak in that tradition of truly honoring and remembering Dixie and the tradition of the Old South, because I think it is wrong for us to throw out all the old history that we know because some Marxist has said that we ought to throw it out. And the completeness, I mean, you're probably all sitting there thinking, well, I'm not a Marxist, so I don't care what the Marxists are saying. But here's the thing, the Marxists have completely taken over the academy. So you may be just reading history websites, the National Battlefield Trust, I don't know, the Smithsonian, whatever you're reading, you're thinking, this isn't Marxism, this is just a history website. But if you look at the historians they are citing, it'll be Eric Foner and other Marxists like that. And what is the problem? So, you know, I don't want to say the mere fact somebody's a Marxist means you should ignore every... Well, maybe I do want to say that. But it's not just because they're a Marxist that you need to throw out their history, but it's because they view history through a particular lens. That is to say, the lens of class conflict or race conflict in this case. So what they're asking us to do is to look at the history of the Old South as racial conflict and forget everything else. Everything to them has to just be about conflict. And so what I want to try and say today is that it is not a history of conflict. In fact, it's a history of cooperation and of bonds of loyalty and devotion and love. And that is what that history is. And the conflict of Reconstruction, and this is really the message that I want to give today, the conflict that we see in Reconstruction was brought in to the South by the federal government and its agents through the radical Republicans, through the Union Leagues. These are the people through the federal, the Freedmen's Bureau that went round the South causing trouble, fomenting conflict and violence, lying to the freed slaves, blatantly telling them lies, making promises nobody could fulfill, and just creating a lot of hostility and conflict. And that is the history of Reconstruction that I want to tell. So if you want to read that history, you can read about it in William Dunning's book, Reconstruction. And he talks about it in great detail. But so people say today, well, you shouldn't read that book because it's racist. So when I first got the book, I thought, okay, let's go into this book and see all the racism. What they're calling racist will be things like saying that slaves could not read or write and that they were mostly illiterate. That's what they mean when they say it's racist. But that is a historical fact. And they don't deny that that was a historical fact. What they're saying is that it's racist to point out the historical fact. So what Dunning says, for example, is if you appoint liberated slaves to government, you know, because you can't appoint any white people because they're all rebels and therefore untrustworthy. So you say the government has to be all the freed slaves who can't read or write. That's what people say. Well, that's racist if you say that. But that is what happened. That is precisely what happened. So I just want to look at this history and to ask, on whom should we pin the blame for the violence and for the racial conflict that erupted in the South? And I'm going to suggest to you that we should pin this squarely on the radical Republicans. That's history. That's not revisionist history. That is the history that happened. So many historians have remarked on the extent to which Abraham Lincoln centralized federal power through his war against the South. And this continued into the Reconstruction era. That's why I call it the World Lincoln's War Destroyed, because that is what the war did. It broke up that world and introduced the world we have now, which is a world of racial conflict. So Eric Foner, the Marxist, actually writes in his revised history of Reconstruction, he has this whole section in the book called The World the War Made. He thinks that's a compliment. He means that in a good way. Look at the world the war made. He thinks you can make a better world through war. And what I want to suggest to you is you don't create new worlds through war, you destroy old worlds. And this, in fact, was one of the points that the Confederate States were trying to make when they seceded. What are you introducing if you break up the old world? What's the new world that you are introducing? There wasn't anything positive to be introduced, and we're still suffering from the effects of that today. Tom said earlier that I've done a lot of work with David Gordon, and I actually have a quote from David Gordon on exactly what I'm about to describe. David Gordon says, frequently, an accepted version of the past turns out to be based on mythology, created to advance special interests. Right, that's what David says. And the mythology that I want to present to you is the mythology constructed by the Marxist revisionists, created to advance their interests of centralizing even more power in the federal government. So this is the Marxist theory, because they believe in conflict. So they say, oh, we have racial conflict. It was caused by racism, and the only way to fix it is to vest more power in the central government to keep the oppressed race safe from the oppressor race that's trying to destroy them. So the more racial conflict there is, the more justification to vest more power in the federal government. And that's why they do it. I mean, in their so-called civil rights acts. So Murray Rothbard said civil rights are phony rights. In their so-called Civil Rights Act of 1871, they gave the president power to suspend habeas corpus. And they said the reason why the president should have such power is because look at what the racists in the South are doing. We need the president to have power to suspend habeas corpus so we can round them all up and jail them and not have to worry about due process. So the more they can create conflict and violence, the more they're able to justify power to themselves. Were people concerned about the suspension of habeas corpus? Yes, they were. To which the answer is, oh, but we need to because look at all the racial conflict. What they neglected to say was that they were the ones who were causing that racial conflict precisely so that they could suspend habeas corpus because they said, well, look at the white Southerners, they are unreconstructed. I say that because I have a lot of unreconstructed friends. To this day, they are unreconstructed. So that's what the federal government was saying. As long as we have unreconstructed people, we need more and more federal power so we can control them all. And that's what was causing trouble. So just as it was alleged that General Sherman's burning of the South was to free the slaves, so they said that the federal powers being introduced in the South during Reconstruction were to enforce racial equality, they said. And how we know they're lying is because when you look at what was happening in the north of the United States, they didn't have so-called racial equality. Black people couldn't vote. So when they said, oh, it's very important that black people in the South should be able to vote, they couldn't vote in their own states. That's how we know they're lying and hypocritical. The best summary of this argument that you can read is Tom DiLorenzo's article, The Consolidation of State Power via Reconstruction. And in that article, Tom DiLorenzo explains how the history of Reconstruction written by Dunning was revised by Marxist scholars. They did not dispute any of the historical facts that I'm about to tell you. They aren't saying any of this history is incorrect. All they're doing is, and I quote, relying heavily on Marxian class conflict theory, they merely painted what they considered a more enlightened picture of the era. This is what I think Clyde Wilson, it was, the historian Clyde Wilson, described as history by theory. So you don't have any new historical facts. What you're doing is providing a new theory to tell a different story about the facts. And what they've come up with is what I call Orwellian revisionism. So it's not Ralph Raker's style of revisionism or the type of revisionism that Tom DiLorenzo told us about at the beginning of the conference. It's a different type of revisionism, which is Orwellian. And I call it that because truth is said to be myth, and myth is said to be truth. So this picture that I have here is actually taken from the Reconciliation Memorial at Arlington, which they dismantled. They said, no, we don't want any more reconciliation because it's racist. You know, that's their argument about everything. They said it's racist. So what are they saying is racist is that it depicts slaves, and they say if you depict slaves, then that's racist. So they took that down, and that's why I say now they call it a myth. They say that any image of harmony in the Old South is a myth. They say it never happened, it didn't exist, it is all a myth. It is not a myth, it is within lived memory. There are still people today who can remember what their grandparents told them about what their grandparents lived. So in that sense, it's still within living memory. It is not a myth. And then the truth is called a myth, but the myths, the Marxist myths they've created, they tell you that that's the new truth. And that's why I call it Orwellian, because they've just appended everything and they tell you the opposite thing. Every day is opposite day. They did not construct anything. They try to tell you that when the South stood in its own defense, that what it was trying to defend was slavery. That is not correct. The South was defending its independence. And so that people like to cite John C. Calhoun in the Senate defending slavery. And what he said, and this is why I think this image is so evocative, Calhoun said, "I fearlessly assert that the existing relation between the two races in the South, against which these blind fanatics are waging war, forms the most solid and durable foundation on which to rear free and stable political institutions. When Calhoun talked about blind fanatics waging war against the South, he was referring to the fanatical abolitionist terrorists like John Brown. I don't think I have time to tell you about him today, but you can go look him up. He believed that God had appointed him to go and kill the slave owners. And by the way, nothing is ever said about the slave owners of the North. That's how we know that they're hypocrites. And I also have a quote from Jefferson Davis in 1848 in the United States Senate when they were debating the Oregon Bill. So there was a debate between the free states and the slave states as to whether the slave states were permitted to settle in the new territories. The senators from the free states saying that those from the slave states shouldn't be allowed to move there because they might bring their slaves and, you know, they don't want that. So that's what the debate was about in 1848. And the senators from the South were asking, if we are not allowed to keep our slaves, what's going to happen to them? To which the answer of the North was, well, why do you care what's going to happen to them? And John Dix of New York said, well, they'll die out. You know, they'll go extinct. Why? What's the problem? That was their kind of attitude. And it's not just, I don't want to depict them as some peculiarly terrible people. That was quite a widespread view at the time. So if you read Robert Higgs's Coercion, Free and Coerced Labor, when he's talking about emancipation and what people expected, that was quite a widespread expectation. People at the time thought that if you didn't keep the slaves and look after them, that they would just die out and go extinct. That's what they believed, although they were proved to be wrong, but that's what they thought at the time. So that's what John Dix was saying, oh, but, you know, they'll go extinct. And this was Jefferson Davis's response. He says, with surprise and horror, I heard this announcement of a policy which seeks through poverty and degradation the extinction of a race of human beings domesticated among us. He says, we, sir, stand in relation to that people as creates a feeling of kindness and protection. We have attachments which have grown with us from childhood to the old servant who nursed us in infancy, to the man who was the companion of our childhood, and the not less tender regard for those who have been reared under our protection. To hear their extinction treated as a matter of public policy or of speculative philosophy arouses our sympathy and our indignation. That was the view of the South. And later, I don't think I'll have time, I was about to tell you about Nathan Bedford Forrest, you know, because I like to talk about him every time I speak about the Old South. So I was going to tell you all about how he rode to war with his slaves. You know, when Jefferson Davis talks about the man who was the companion of our childhood, that was the reason why many Confederate officers went to war with their slaves. So now the Marxists are saying, well, that doesn't count. It doesn't count because, you know, the only reason they brought them was so they could carry the baggage and drive the horses and, you know, look after, feed, make sure the horses are well fed. Well, yes, that is not debunking the history. That's just describing the bonds of loyalty and devotion between them. So now let's see what improvements Lincoln was going to bring during Reconstruction. What was the world Lincoln wanted to make? Lincoln's plan was to deport all the freed slaves. He was going to free them and deport them. Lincoln thought they would be grateful and happy. He wasn't planning this. I know many people here don't like Lincoln, but you know, I'm gonna be the only person here to speak in his defense. He wasn't planning this as a form of punishment. He thought they would welcome being returned to whence they came. That was his idea. He said, we'll just lay on ships, we'll send them to Africa, to Liberia, to Central America, to Haiti. In fact, a lot of them were taken to Haiti. They didn't like it very much in Haiti. They soon came back. But that was Lincoln's plan. And you can see that even one of the governors of Massachusetts at the time, who was saying, all the slaves need to be freed. And when people said to him, well, can they come to Massachusetts when they're free? He says, oh, no, don't come to Massachusetts. Why don't you stay in the South where it's warm and you'll be happy? You know, so this is the idea that these people who wanted to free the slaves didn't want anything to do with them. They wanted to free them and that'd be somebody else's problem. Go to Haiti or anywhere. So that was the plan. He was going to rid the United States of them, exactly as New England had rid itself of slavery by selling their slaves to the South. So I'm just going to conclude this section with a quote again from Tom DiLorenzo, who says, the war for Southern independence was not a war to free the slaves, as the high school civics class version of history has been presented. He says, rather, it was a war between Southerners who wanted to maintain the founder's system of limited, decentralized government, and Northern Yankees, sorry to say the word Yankees, Murray Rothbard talks about Yankees a lot as well. So if you're wondering, what's a Yankee? Go look up Murray Rothbard's writing on this. I'm just reading from DiLorenzo. He says, Northern Yankees who wanted to replace the old republic with a highly centralized mercantilist state. An auxiliary myth has it that federal policy in the conquered South was aimed at binding the nation's wounds and establishing a just and lasting peace. That is not what they did. The first thing they did when they arrived in the South, this is South Carolina in 1863. So it's relatively quite soon after war broke out, and as soon as they had control of parts of the South, what was the first thing they did in order to bind the nation's wounds and establish a just and lasting peace? It was to conscript the freed slaves into the army, into the Union army, and to give them weapons. I don't know what peace they thought they were going to create in that fashion. Many of these, I use the word conscript because the way they said it was that the slaves freed themselves. They like telling you this now. They freed themselves and ran to the Union Army and said, we want to be soldiers. That's not what happened. A lot of them were virtually kidnapped from the woods where they fled to avoid the Union Army. And they were just basically just put into the army and told, you're in the army now, and given uniforms and weapons and told them, you are now in charge of policing the white Southerners. You are the people in charge. Fleming has a really good discussion of some of the lies that these people were told. Apparently, some of the freed slaves believed, were led to believe, I should say, that now the whites would be their slaves. It's like now you are the people in charge. Look at them sitting there on the podium. These are the Yankees that Rothbard described. We've rescued you, we've given you weapons, and now you are going to be in charge. And that is exactly what happened. This is the world that Lincoln's war made. The man, so this image, you'll see this image sent around a lot as to illustrate Reconstruction. They think that this is an image that paints them in a very good light. The man standing in the center there is from the Freedmen's Bureau. And you can just see him. He's put himself, he's the savior, redeemer. By the way, they used to tell the freed slaves that they should all vote Republican because Jesus Christ was a Republican. So he's standing there. As you can see, he's depicted. He's got the freed slaves behind him and he's keeping them safe from the unreconstructed Southerners whom he's saying, no, you know, don't attack these freed former slaves that I am now going to keep safe. And that's the image they like you to see because you think, oh, wow, that's so nice. We need the federal government to keep the races apart. Otherwise, they're just going to be fighting all the time at each other's throats. This is the world they made, and they think it's great. They're actually proud of this. They think it's better than the old South that they destroyed. In fact, these men from the Freedmen's Bureau were the people who told lies, spread propaganda. They would tell freed slaves that the white Southerners just want to attack them all. I think it was Thaddeus Stevens in Congress who would brazenly lie and say that if they don't send the federal troops to the South, all the white Southerners are going to exterminate all the freed slaves, and he said they'll be buried in unmarked graves. They are the ones who in 1848 were saying, well, who cares? They can go extinct. We don't care. But now in Reconstruction, they're pretending that without their interventions, nobody will be able to keep anybody safe in the South. And so these, I don't think I'll have time to go through it, but I talk about how the white militia started to form units for self-defense. I talk about the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, which arose in response to the fact that all the freed slaves had been armed and fed with propaganda and made to feel as if they were fighting defense when there was nothing to defend against. And so the white militia now armed themselves to fight defense from people who were attacking them under the impression that they were fighting defense. And the federal government loves this because it just creates more and more violence for them to come in and reform. And that's why they like to tell us, oh, you know, the Ku Klux were just racist and they wanted to attack people. Why? Because they were racist, and they don't tell you the truth of the trouble that they had caused. So when they say reconstructing race relations, what they have done is the opposite. It's the Orwellian opposite. They have not reconstructed race relations. They have disrupted race relations and fomented conflict and violence that continues to this very day, propagated by exactly the same myths. Thank you.